We have on the line a comrade that is now based in Chiapas, Mexico. Do we hear each other?
Yeah, I hear. Do you hear me?
Okay, everything sounds great. Thank you for taking your time to make this conversation with us. Let's start with some basic information about what you do in Chiapas. If we understand correctly, you are engaged in different forms of practical solidarity with the struggle of the Zapatista communities. Can you be more specific about what is it that you do?
Yeah, sure. I'm working in a media collective. We're doing audiovisual formation, and we started in 1998 when there were like more open state repression on the Zapatista communities. And there, yeah, my collective came in and brought cameras, like video cameras, and yeah, started to give formation so that all the repression could be captured and could be, yeah, shown to the world. And from 2014 on, the Tercios Compass, the media compass from the Zapatistas, were founded, and so it wasn't necessary anymore that we would give formation if the EZLN would do it by themselves. And so now we are more working with other struggles here in Chiapas, for example, the defense of territory and stuff like that. But yeah, we're here, and if like communities need some help with movie stuff and yeah, media, we are here to help. And also we did cover the media in the last caravan that was the South Resist. And yeah, that was our latest thing we did.
Okay. Now let's turn to the recent worrying events in Chiapas. A few days ago, an urgent news reached us about an attack of paramilitary forces against one of the Zapatista autonomous communities. Can you say more about what exactly happened? How serious was the attack? And are these kind of attacks against Zapatista communities common?
Yeah. Okay. On May 22nd, there was the last attack on the community Moises and Gandhi, which is part of the autonomous municipality Lucio Cabañas, which is part of the 10th Caracol, Patria Nueva. And, first from one side of the village, they started to shoot members of the Orcao at around 4 p.m. And at 8 p.m. from the other side of the village, another part of Orcao was starting to fire as well. And yeah, in this fire, the compa Jorge Lopez Santis was shot in the chest. And first he was denied medical service, but after urgent action by human rights centers, they got that he went to hospital in Tuxtla Gutierrez, which is the capital of Chiapas, where he still has an adequate medical care, but yeah, his situation is, as far as I know, he's still living, and yeah. And sadly, it's not a only case. There's also aggressions on the community in Nuevo San Gregorio, which is also part of Caracol 10, and in the last year, there was also the displacement of the community Emiliano Zapata and the community and another community, where yeah, you see that the violence against communities from the EZLN is still happening.
Okay, you mentioned Orcao. Orcao is, if we understand correctly, a paramilitary force that is behind also this latest attack. Can you say more about what Orcao is? What is the agenda that they have, the methods that they use, who are they fighting for, and what is the relation of Orcao with the Mexican state.
Yeah, so I think for explaining what Orcao is, I will go back in history. And yeah, the translation of Orcao is Regional Organization of Coffee Growers. So it was founded in 1988 and firstly had the function of fighting for fair coffee pricing so that the coffee planters could have like a good life, which is a good thing, I think. But with the time, in the late 90s, Orcao started to work with the state and get state funds and positions and power in the government and things like that in change for doing favors for the government. And from then on, attacks started in 2002. They attacked the Poblado Javier López and burned the crops of the Zapatistas that are growing their food there. And it went on. In 2009, there was the attempt of displacing people from Bosque Bonito, which is another community, and also the attempt to attack the Caracol Morelia, while there was an international encounter in San Cristobal. Also in 2011, they attacked Poblado El Paraíso, destructed 4,500 coffee plants, and there were armed attacks on support bases of the ZLN. And yeah, in the following years, it went on like that. There's a large register of the attacks against Zapatista communities. And yeah, sadly, also this attack on Moises Gandhi is not a new thing. They started in 2019 to do armed attacks on this community. And there's a total impunity of this organization and their attacks and their violence. So I think there you can see like the first connection it has with the state, and also that a research of the EZLN brought to light that the money the state was sending for a school was used in arms of big impact. And maybe for showing a little bit more how the connection between the state and Orcao is, I think it's good to look into the program of counterinsurgency that's still going on. And there's like the open attacks by military and the open repression after the San Andres Los Acuerdos de San Andrés. This open violence changed more to a low-intensity war. And, parts of that are the paramilitary, like Orcao or Los Chicholines or other military paramilitary groups. And displacements, which we see in Chiapas a lot, there's like 70,000 displaced persons in Chiapas. And also selective or massive assassinations is sadly a thing that's seen oftenly. And all of this fits very good into an analysis many critical persons have in Mexico, which is that state, economic forces like capitalist big firms, and also the organized crime are like doing a thing, the three of them. And so for example, big landowners really often are the government forces and have their own friends with the organized crime. So there's a really, really powerful connection between these and much corruption. And so often, like when there's a capitalist interest, they say to the governors, oh yeah, we can give you money for implementing our project in this part. And if the people say no, the organized crime or the paramilitary will hit there, and afterwards, the capitalist interests can mm-hmm. enter there. And so I think this connection is like a really visible thing.
Okay. And then how does the AZLN and the Zapatista communities deal with this kind of attacks and other forms of pressure?
Yeah, so in the last few years, I didn't hear much about how they answered to these attacks. But a little while longer ago, there was, for example, in La Garucha, which is like another Caracol, there were attacks, and the EZLN sent men that were not armed with firearms, but just with sticks, but it was really, really many military forces of the EZLN, and they went to this community that was attacked, and there, the people with that were armed with firearms, the aggressors, tried to attack, but they went to them and said, "So you can try to kill every one of us, but we're really many people." So, in the end, they gave their arms. They went away because there was too much presence of the EZLN. And the Zapatista communities, there are also other strategies, like from the civil arm. So, for example, if there's like a land in dispute that other groups want to enter, sometimes the EZLN or members of the EZLN go there and plant and have their presence there, and so the aggressors don't enter.
Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe let's now move a little bit sideways or away from the explicitly Zapatista struggle and their context of their struggle and speak more about the general dynamics in Chiapas in last period. We hear news that in general there are tensions rising, so not only in immediate connection with the Zapatista struggle.
Yeah, that's like a really, really hard thing. Like the last 6 years, more or less, the violence in Chiapas increased a lot. That was, for one part, I think, because of the elections and because the change of power always brings violence with it. Here. And also in the last years, there is an open dispute between two cartels, like the Cartel Jalisco Nueva Generación, which is one really big power, and the Cartel Sinaloa. And so, at the moment, for example, at the. I want to start a little bit different.
Take your time.
Chiapas is like the most southern state of Mexico, it is the border with Guatemala. And so this plaza, this region is very important to traffic drugs. And so, these cartels are trying to get the control over it. And with that, a lot of violence is happening. Also, there are territorial conflicts between communities. And so, there are armed groups that are willing to give everything to kill for having territory. Mm-hmm. And, it's really crazy around here. Like, nearly every day you can hear about assassinations, about armed conflicts, about a lot of violence. So, sadly, the attacks on the EZLN and not are the only thing that's happening. Mm-hmm. There's a much more of violence going on.
Okay. After Journey for Life, there was practically no official declaration from EZLN, except a short statement about the war in Ukraine, and that was already in March 2022, so more than 1 year ago. At the same time, some sources that are linked to the Zapatistas and their supporters of their struggle, such as Schools for Chiapas website, they openly warn that Chiapas is on the brink of, how they put it, civil war. Can you maybe comment both on the silence around of EZLN in the context of high tensions and on the civil war concept itself?
Yeah, so I think for one part, the silence of the EZLN is a thing that already happened in the history. So, for example, a thing that came up 2 months ago is the case of Manuel Gomez Vasquez, which is a base of support of the EZLN, mm-hmm. who was taken prisoner 2.5 years ago. And just now, two months ago, the EZLN made their research and they finished it. And so they did the case openly. They mentioned it to civil, to human rights organizations. And yeah, I think for example, in 2000, before the EZLN went to Mexico City, there was like a period of 3 years that they didn't went publicly. And I think that's like a thing, that they take their decisions and take their time to make good decisions. Mm-hmm. And also, that was what compañeros in the Journey for Life were telling us, so that they took 11 years to plan their insurgency, and this is a big thing to plan, mm-hmm. but also other things. I think they take their time to do the right decision. And yeah, maybe in some time there will be big changes, or maybe it's going to take a little bit longer and they're not going to be that big, but I think something's going to happen, and EZLN certainly knows when they wanna let us know.
Okay. And about the civil war?
The civil war. I think it was in the comunicado they did about the sequestration, the kidnapping of the two bases de apoyo while there was the Journey for Life, mm-hmm. and I think they related it to this general normalization of violence in Chiapas, and that it's like a really delicate situation.
Okay.
That would be my understanding of the statement of the brink of civil war.
Yeah, we also remember, yes, that during Journey for Life, they stressed a lot the challenges ahead and the difficult situation that for sure is awaiting them on their return. I believe that we have slowly running out of time, so I would ask you for the conclusion, just one classic question. It's about what can the supporters of the Zapatista struggle from around the world do, both about this latest particular incidents of violence and, of course, in general? This, and, of course, if you would like to add something that hasn't been mentioned before, please feel free to do so.
So I think, sadly, directly here, there can't be done much because the people in power have the arms. And what we can do is show our solidarity, because like international solidarity often can prevent other things to happen and also can do much pressure. So I think for one part, there's yesterday there was published a national and international statement against the attacks against the Zapatista communities, and also there's a convocation for the 8th of June for an international day against the aggressions against the Zapatista communities. And I think that's basically what people around the world can do, show that they see what's happening and show that the state can't do this without people noting all over the world.
Yes, we will certainly be doing whatever we can. We believe also this interview on radio that we are doing right now is a contribution to informing the people around the world about the situation. So thank you for the time that you took to do it. We wish you strength, courage, and a lot of energy that you need to continue providing practical solidarity.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for inviting me, and thanks a lot for doing this show. And yeah, showing the world that there is much to fight for.
Yeah, we will continue to do our best. So greetings from northwestern Balkans to the southeast of Mexico. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.